Good, we're recording. All right, so it's September 14th, 2011. I'm Rick Hansen, and I want to talk tonight about healthy passion. Woo. So, this is a follow-on from last week's discussion. I just have a ballpark sense. How many of you were here were not here last week? Not here, so fresh. Okay, I'll do a little reset here. So, as you probably know, the Buddha taught that there is suffering, not that life is entirely suffering, but there is suffering, and that the cause of suffering is a word that's been translated in a variety of ways. Craving is probably close to the most basic translation, otherwise known sometimes as attachment or desire. You've heard people say the root of all suffering is desire, or the Buddha said that attachment is the root of suffering, right? On the other hand, what about the ordinary and perfectly reasonable desire for a breath? Or to find a bathroom if the cup overflows, right? If you runneth over, as it were. Or the desire or attachment to our children, our loved ones. Or the desire to make art or make the world a better place. What do we do with those desires, right? Are they wholesome, unwholesome? Do they really create suffering? Or what about the point made by Nancy last week that, you know, many great things have been accomplished through what appears to be incredible levels of desire, drivenness, fervor, perhaps even to the point of, you know, obsession and compulsion. Think of great works of art sometimes that seem to come out of this sort of tortured imagination. What about that as well? It's a really thorny question, isn't it? You know, what is healthy desire? What is unhealthy desire? And so last week I presented some of the new neuroscience on the brain, which has found out that there are two fundamental systems in the brain, one that drives us toward goals not yet attained, and a separate system that essentially helps us feel pleasure when we like things, when we enjoy things, including when we have a sense of fulfillment or satisfaction in the attainment of our goals. Right? And I was making the distinction there between wanting on the one hand and liking on the other, which are kind of good summary words for these two systems. And I was making the argument last time that trouble begins when we tip out of liking into wanting. In other words, it's natural to enjoy and like what's pleasant and to not enjoy and dislike what's unpleasant. That's very natural. And it's natural to take appropriate action based on what's enjoyable or not enjoyable, comfortable or uncomfortable, pleasant or unpleasant. But when we start tipping into a quality of contraction or obsession or drivenness, tension, pressure, or then we're moving into suffering. Or even if we are in situations where we are, you know, pursuing wholesome wants, like writing a symphony or making art or, you know, healing the world of racism, what have you, but we do it in such a way that there's a fair amount of collateral damage for ourselves and others. So that was kind of the table setting from last time. And we were exploring, especially in relationships, what is that tipping point? And what are the warning signs in our body? And in our heart, in our mind, when we start moving out of, you know, kind of the sweet spot of, in a phrase, wholesome aspiration, and tipping into craving, wanting, insisting, demanding, driving, pressing to fulfill desires in ways that are problematic for us and others. So that's the table set. And I thought what we could do today, if you're willing to do it, and you don't have to do it, is momentarily I'll encourage you to find a partner, and really, if you could, talk about an example for you of pursuing goals or being lived by a wholesome aspiration, right? Because I think both go together. There's a kind of aiming, and there's a kind of being carried by a wave of, right? Love or creativity or loyalty or generosity, what have you. Okay? So I'm asking you to explore, if you could, an example for you in your life, or more than one example, if you like, a couple minutes each way, of what is wholesome aspiration for you. Okay? And then we'll come back and talk about it. So you understand the question? What are examples for you where you're moved by passion or energy, or there's a movement of self-expression that feels positive and wholesome, right? And whether it comes kind of from the bottom up and carries you along, or there's more of a top-down kind of vision of a wholesome due north, you know, your guiding star, that's what you're going to explore. And if you can bring that into relationships as much as possible, that would be great, but it's unnecessary. Okay? Anybody have a question about what the topic is? It's important to bring it down to earth. You know, my child, when he was little, started to fall out of a chair. When he's about 2 years old, it's kind of wobbly. You know, I lunged forward and I caught him. Wholesome desire, you know. Making love with your partner, wholesome desire. Hungry, sitting down to a meal, wholesome desire. Yeah. Aiming to offer something of value to others, wholesome desire. Right. What are wholesome desires for you? Okay, so how about you grab a partner? Okay, it's okay to sit this out if you don't want to do this with a partner. It's really fine. Okay. Pick an A and a B and spread out so you can be candid. Of course, don't tell your partner anything you don't want to tell them. If you want a partner, don't have one, raise your hand, please. Partner, anybody partner? You can be my partner, which is good, my friend Michael. Okay, pick an A and a B. Okay, good, you got a partner, perfect. All right, B's mainly listen. A's, you're going to talk for 2 or 3 minutes. I'll kind of go with my instincts. And the thing is, what have you learned? What are examples of wholesome aspiration? And even better, what have you learned helps you stay in the sweet spot of wholesome aspiration without tipping into the pit of snakes, that craving which leads to suffering? Okay? A's begin. Please come on back. Okay. So, what did you come up with? I think that, just as a sidebar, that this format is especially appropriate for this topic. By format, I mean really kind of a collective wisdom, because we're householders. We're living in the West. We're awash in a sea of desirable experiences, objects, etc. You know, we're also awash in a sea of threats to fend off and manage and deal with. How do we do this without tipping into that, you know, subtle and not always so subtle pit of snakes? Or for me, it feels like a fire, a kind of fire. So what have you learned? What works for you? What are What are for you wholesome desires? And what helps you stay in the sweet spot? Who'd like to share? If you move your hand, I'll call on you. Even if you scratch your nose, man, I'm like a pointer dog. Where's the bird? Yeah, please.
I was saying that to give support to a friend when she was hurting in a way that I understood, and to be able to give it to her and not to need to get anything back feels really good, and especially because it's a woman who has been very difficult for me.
Great.
Yeah.
What helped you stay in that sweet spot, especially with someone that's challenging?
I just stayed in the moment with it. I didn't trip out.
Yeah. So I might just flag, including for the recording, a couple of keys, not being attached to the results, mm-hmm. and staying in the moment. Mm-hmm. Other people. Great.
The question caused me to reflect on past times, and when I've been highly motivated to take a course of action or change my life in a certain way, and I realize now how much that I've benefited from Buddhist practice and principles of self-observation. And what do you call it? Meta-awareness?
Metacognition, meta-awareness, yeah.
Kind of rising above yourself, looking down.
Bird's eye view.
And saying, okay, what is going on in terms of wholesome or unwholesome desires or my life? Being steadiness of mind or whatever, and it's really been an immense benefit. Just the core principles that we learn here, elsewhere. So that's what came to me as I was kind of reporting of phase. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. And one thing I pulled out from that, of course, is that kind of observing ego, or observing awareness, if you will, that can watch us starting to tip into that. You know, slippery slope of increasing fire, okay, into the frying pan, right? Great, in the back?
My mom's 92, and I visit her in assisted living almost every day.
Yeah.
And I want to make her life comfortable and do what I can. I find that if I drive myself to be absolutely perfect doing that, to handle absolutely every single problem when I arrive at the door, then it tips over into driven and burden and very negative. So I have to know that I don't have to be perfect, and I have to know when enough is enough.
Great.
Don't always know.
Yeah. So letting the pursuit of the desire and the attainment not be perfect, and also knowing when enough's enough, you know. Yeah, thank you. Okay, great. Pierrette.
Well, I noticed in this process that just looking back on the source of the wholesome desire was in itself a truing mechanism.
Mm.
If I'm creating a piece of artwork, then staying with that lovely urge to create is itself the remedy for going overboard.
Yeah. Yeah, coming back to the source of it, right? Yeah. Okay, good. Great. Yeah. Great.
Years ago, I used to poison myself regularly with the chemicals of photography. So I couldn't do it because I couldn't breathe. But now photography's different. It's so great. And about a year ago, I was able to start again. Huh? And I was so anxious to start. I bought a little zoomy camera thing. And I've been wanting to restart for decades.
Uh-huh.
And now I've been able to do it. And I'm not worried about whether I have to spend hours in Photoshop making it perfect. I don't care. But the process of connecting, usually I take pictures of animals. Mm-hmm. So the process of connecting with the animals, then I had to make another leap, which was when I first started, I very self-righteously said, I'm never going to print anything, because that is a waste of paper, ink, it kills trees, and all we need to do is download everything. Until a couple weeks ago. I went for a workshop, and at the end, we went to the photographer's studio. The guy printed one of my photos on a $6,000 printer. I'm having it framed.
And you what?
I'm having it framed.
Oh, okay.
And then he said, you're missing out on the fun of giving away your pictures. And he was so right. So I immediately bought a little $600 printer, $150 printer, but it works great. Yeah. So now I can print out pictures and just give them away. I don't care if they're slightly out of focus, or I could have spent hours in Photoshop to make this little, you know, tiny bit better. I don't care. It's just the processing, getting back to something that I like, connecting with the creatures, and then connecting with the people that I'm sharing it with, which then helps them connect with the creatures. So it's that's what I mean.
Thank you. Great. One more, and then we'll do round two. Okay.
Quickly, in my desire to connect emotionally with a partner, I found that taking ownership of my demons, stuff, fears, whatever, allows love to flow. It's easier for him to love me and vice versa.
It's good. Taking a responsibility for one's tendencies and one's mind. I think that's beautiful. It's so fundamental. And it's interesting how rarely you actually hear that kind of language in Buddhism. You hear it a lot in psychology, and particularly humanistic psychology. But in Buddhism itself, that the pointedness of your phrasing, it's present in the Buddha's last teaching, his Parinibbana teaching, just before he passed away, he translated variously as make a lamp, be a lamp unto yourself, be your own teacher, be your own guide, take responsibility for your practice, you know, never forget that you'll die, begin, you know, that's, and it keeled over, essentially, in a nutshell. And but it's very, so I appreciate you bringing that up, that pointedness about taking responsibility for our mind. Okay, thanks. Well, so now, kind of round two, and I should add, I've been slipping a little on the 8:30 end time, you might have noticed lately, and I'm going to end very punctually, partly because I need to zip out of here without too much attachment to get home quickly for some things this evening I've got to do. So I'll end really close to 8:30, okay? So round two, if you could, for a moment, just think about something in your life where you don't have wholesome, serene desire. You're caught up by something. You're driven, or you're upset about it, or you're worked up about it, or it's really got you. Maybe something in a relationship. Right now, I can find myself getting charged by someone in my extended family system that I'm worried about. I could also find a certain drivenness related to my personal to-do list. Whatever it is for you, think about something for you where there's a tendency to suck you into strong wanting in a way that feels pressed, stressed.
Excluding chocolate, right?
As I had a guru for a while, he said, once a philosopher, twice a pervert. In other words, there's a place for one of everything, including chocolate. Okay, so think for yourself, or addict, what have you. You know, it's that fifth and sixth cookie in a row that's the problem, you know. Okay, so think for a moment, if you could. And then, if you can, ask yourself, what wisdom could I bring in from what I know or what I've just been hearing the last few minutes What wisdom could I bring to that particular tough situation that would be helpful for me? About moving out of wanting and back more into liking, disliking. You know, moving out of drivenness, pressing, straining, not seeing the whole picture, coming back to center. What would help you? So I'll just be quiet for a couple minutes and then we'll talk about it. Maybe you can hear a voice of inner wisdom that might offer a word or a phrase or an image to you about this question. You know, how to move back out of wanting that's problematic back to a happier place. Okay, coming back. What do you see? What are some things that just come up, you know? Do's and don'ts from the wiser angel of our nature? Yeah.
The compulsion to say that one more yes to one more thing to do. And realizing that the one more thing keeps the load too heavy. It's the forgetting that if I miss something, it really doesn't matter because what matters is right now. And when I remind myself of the right nowness of it all, it makes me feel like a foolish chicken with their head cut off that keeps darting for everything because everything in most cases is so good, but so is the moment. Mm. And I forget that and say yes to one more thing. I don't want to miss anything. There's nothing to miss. It's already happening.
That's beautiful. I hope my microphone really picked up what you had to say there. That's really great. Thank you. Wow, that's great. Yeah. Linda.
Mine is similar. There's a kind of greed around relationships and connection and the resonance, and that can be very wholesome, but there's a greed that comes up around it. And so the practice is to have the enoughness of the present moment and a sense of presence. And I can so feel the difference in my body when I'm in presence and when I'm in greed, and it's just so clear the difference between the two.
Yeah, that's great. Yay, good, thanks Linda.
A lot of times after I leave here, I'm trying to go swimming and I'm pushing that into my night. But I just had the experience of, you know, kind of that drive to go swimming and then part of me going, I don't feel like rushing. Now I feel like soaking, so I'll see how it goes. And then this peace that came over me, like, because I actually listened. And I find that with parts of yourself, if you actually listen to one, like one might be dominant at that moment, like your body or your mind or your spirit. And like if sometimes like your body just goes, thank you, you know, and then I feel so peaceful, like, thank you, you listened to me. Or my spirit goes, wow, thank you,
wow,
you listened. And then it's like, oh, that's the answer.
Thank you. Well, you can just feel it right there in your own body, can't you? When we listen to the body, that poor little soft animal of the body works so hard to help us, doesn't it? Anyway, it goes, thank you, thank you. That's great. I think giving yourself permission, too, is implicit, you know, in what was said, you know, that, okay, it's all right. Hey, Tom? Yeah.
One thing that's just come to me is that one source of suffering for me is having many aspirations and dabbling in a lot of, Rob talked about photography, then that, artwork, writing a book, this, that, and the other thing. And so one of the things that comes to me is just really focusing on getting clarity on what is a wholesome, a really important and wholesome desire. Because you know, having the many aspirations, it creates its own suffering.
Yeah.
Because there's only so much time.
Right. I'll just say quickly for myself, one thing that you're reminding me of is I'm saying no to some things that are pretty sweet, and it's killing me. Just what you're saying, you know? We're like that little kid. Like, these kids on Halloween, you know, they have these little buckets, and they want to fill it with candy, and their bucket's overflowing, and they start getting panicked. Like, how can I get more candy, but my bucket's already overflowing? And you know they'll never eat it all. And if their parents are smart, they'll, like, remove, like, 5 candies a night at least, you know, secretly, if not the whole darn thing. Anyway, but we want more and more and more. Yeah. It's crazy. Okay, yeah, please.
My wife and I just moved here 4 days ago, something like that. After a long time living, we used to live here, and we just moved back here after a long time. And this desire to like get here and be okay with all of it and all that kind of stuff. I realized what came to me when you started this whole thing was just slow down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it was like for a moment I just settled down a bit.
Thank you. Great. Yeah.
Well, I had just written the word slow down before you said it.
It's Marin, man. You came back, and it's where it's happening. See, you're already here. Wait till the peacock feathers come out. Really. Okay. Go ahead.
And I think there's a passage that the Buddha said about contemplate. You probably would know. Contemplating the greater happiness. With whichever choice you make.
Right. And giving up a lesser happiness for a greater one.
Yeah, and if I slow down enough to think about how it felt when I maybe ate the 6 cookies or went too far with one of my adult children, even though it was a wholesome desire of what I was trying to do, but they didn't want to hear it at the time, how I felt then versus how I felt if I closed my mouth on time, or in both cases, actually. It's a much better, greater happiness.
Maybe one last comment, and then we'll sit for a minute.
Not very sure. Yeah. One part of your guided meditation actually disturbed me because I made a leap journey, which I did not really want to make. You said the moment, this moment is enough. So wasn't that about what
you said? Finding the enoughness in this moment.
Yeah, finding. Then I think, oh no, does that imply that this life is enough? And I thought, no, that can't be. Because I want so many things to be different in my life. It can't be, but maybe it is. If it must imply, must be a connection between the moments and the moments of one's life.
I think you're right, personally, and I forget that you're right And I keep trying to remember that you're right.
I will try that too. Yeah. I fail often. Yeah. Thank you.
So in conclusion, you might imagine, you know, like a little whiteboard near you somewhere, like where you work or at home, where you are a lot, or, in, you know, it's in your mind, of course, although it may be out there as well. And you might imagine a takeaway for you from tonight, like a word or a phrase or an image, maybe simply a sound. Like, I'm just thinking of the sound through the pine trees in the Sierras. Immediately takes you into the sufficiency of that moment, whatever it is for you. If you were to take away just one thing, maybe two or three at the most, but basically one thing, what would a one thing be that you would like to put on that whiteboard, as it were, or play as a recording, or offer as a scent or a touch that would help you remember this, for you, this sweet spot? Not to say it out loud, just to know it for yourself. So let's sit for a minute. Thank you very much, and hopefully see you next week with the Rinpoche.
Cool.
Okay.
I have a question. Since we have so many new people here tonight, we need to reset this room with the chairs, with an aisle down the center and rows of four chairs on each side, so it'd make a lot faster for everybody.